A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison as England named their 15-man squad for the two-match test series against New Zealand, which of course starts next month. James Bracey and Ollie Robinson have been called up for the first time, and there's a recall for Craig Overton. Over the course of the show, we'll dissect the squad, debate who should be included, who's missing out. We'll also hear from England fast bowler Stuart Broad, get his thoughts on the test side. As well as that, we'll be joined by Durham duo Chris Rushworth and Scott Borthwick after a record-breaking week in the Northeast. And if that isn't enough, we'll also be speaking to former England fast bowler Harry Gurney after he announced his retirement this week. So, plenty to discuss. You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. Army, yesterday you penned your provisional England squad, and you were right, there is no IPL 5, no Moeen Ali, Johnny Bairstow, Joss Butler, Sam Curran and Chris Wokes. They're being given a rest after their quarantine, but you nailed it. You got everybody. You got James Bracey, you got Ollie Robinson, so no surprises for you then.
No surprises. I'm chuffed to bits for the new guys. Really am. I know what it's like to get that call. Whoever gave the call, whether it was Silverwood or, you know, whether Joe Root might have called up himself, just, you know, just say welcome. You know, you get your first official call up. These guys know what it's like to be in the England bubble because they've been travelling around for 18 months with England, not being in the squads, but there as reserves. So finally to get recognition for all the hard work, you know, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. We've managed, we've said many times over the course of the last 6 weeks, players who have been with that England group, how do I get in? You know, Craig Overton, we spoke to Craig a couple of weeks ago. You know, what do I knock on Silverwood's door when you're in India or even last summer, right, boss, how do I get into this group? And he would have probably said, a boatload of wickets, overs under your belt, few runs, wouldn't go amiss if you're a bowler, a volume of runs, hundreds as a batsman, that's your currency. Well, Bracey is in as good a form as you'll get. He's playing the team, Gloucester, riding high. Looks as though they're going to get into the top division. Fantastic. Craig Overton has got a second, I think, in the wicket taker, or third in the wicket taker behind Ollie Robinson and then Simon Harmer. So these two guys, Ollie Robinson, 9 for a few weeks ago. Craig Overton missed out last week. He had a bit of a rest, which wasn't a bad one to miss with the rain affected. I'm really, really chuffed to bits that they're getting recognised for putting in the hard work. They're going to go in with a bit of form. It'll just be a case of who plays and who doesn't. So we're going to listen to Stuart Broad, hear what Stuart's got to say. He's been very, very calculated with what he's had to say over the course of the last few days when he's been doing the Chance to Shine and a few other things. He's basically saying what he said after the first test last summer. He said it before the first test this summer, just to put a shot across the bow to say, right, if you think there's going to be a selection change with Broad and Anderson, you've got another thing coming. When you pick your best team for the first test match, me and Jimmy have got a boatload of wickets. We know these conditions. We're nowhere near finished. And everybody that we've spoke to so far, manners in the last 6 weeks on the Cricket Collective, is telling us Stuart Broad is bowling well. Well, he just reminded the media yesterday before the selection was announced that he is bowling well. He is ready. And do not leave me out of that first test match squad.
I fear a little bit for Ollie Robinson and James Bracey in the fact that they've been with England for a year. They're suffering terminal bubbleitis that, you know, Bracey's beat Sri Lanka and India. And I just look and at the 15 and I can't find a way to squeeze them in.
No, I struggle to find a way for Bracey in. You could have possibly played Bracey and Bantam at seven instead of Folks, but that would be a kick in the teeth to Ben Folks, who's worked hard to get his chance. So if Josh Butler and Johnny Bairstow are resting because of IPL, then I really do think Folks should keep Wicket. He's probably there to cover Dom Sibley, and whether Dom Sibley can prove his fitness between now and the first test match on the 2nd of June. If he does, I expect Sibley to play. I don't see any changes in the top three. And when that comes, is he fighting, possibly fighting with Dan Lawrence? Dan Lawrence is just getting 150 for Essex. So, you know, he'll probably take Stokes' place at number five. The interesting one, the reason why I mentioned is Stuart Broad is a conundrum. There is a conundrum here because I think in an ideal world, you'd want to play Wood, Anderson and Broad as your three seamers to go with Jack Leach. That would mean Jack Leach would have to bat at number eight. You look at the way Ollie Robinson and Craig Overton have performed so far this summer in county cricket. They've got runs under the belt. You know, they're not genuine all-rounders in the Ben Stokes category, but they are number eight batsmen. The Ashley Giles from my time when I played, you know, the number eight batsman who is going to get you a 50, potentially get you a few more. Ollie Robinson and Craig Overton tick that box. So if England don't want to go in with sort of, they're not four number 11s, probably four number 10s, they might have to go in at number eight with a Robinson or an Overton, which means one of your big three, your fast lad in Wood, or you potentially have to leave Broad at Anderson now. I don't see that happening. I potentially see Robinson playing at number eight. I can see Anderson and Broad playing, and potentially Wood misses out and possibly plays in the second test match at Edgbaston, with maybe a little bit more life in the surface.
Honestly, Harmy, I think I'd be happy with anybody at number eight, any of those names you mentioned, even if it was Jack Leach at number eight. It's not like any of them are bunnies. Anyway, let's hear from Chris Silverwood, who was speaking to our producer, Scott Taylor, a bit earlier.
Hey, Chris, hope you're well. How important is it to expose the likes of James Bracey and, you know, Craig Overton's coming back into squad ahead of that Ashes at the back end of the year?
Well, I mean, it's one thing we've talked about. I mean, to try and get to the point where we're not debuting anybody in Australia. It's been a plan now for a while. And we have given different people different experiences. I mean, debuted people, got more experience into people. So we're banking that all the way to the Ashes, really. Given opportunity, we'd like to give them out. We would, but at the same time, we've got to make sure it's the best thing for the team as well. And the team is balanced and it's the right team that we're putting out there. Hence why we've got so many options available to us. And the exciting thing is we've got so many young players in there that will now get an opportunity to shine.
And just finally, how important is it for this test squad? There's no Ben Stokes, no Josh Butler, that you've got the likes of Ollie and Craig that can bat as well in that lower order.
Well, I think that's one of the keys as well. Obviously, the two of them are very capable with the bat and will give us those options at sort of seven and eight, around that sort of area, which is what we need, really. Because, I mean, it has showed that you lose a Wokes, a Curran or a Stokes, then it does make it hard to very difficult to balance a side. So, you know what I mean? The more people we can get through that are comfortable sort of fulfilling those roles. But I think the exciting thing is, you know what I mean? We talk about we haven't got them. But, I mean, if we look at what we have got, these guys, they're fantastic cricketers and they're going to get an opportunity now, which really excites me.
That was Chris Silverwood speaking to our producer, Scott Taylor. And now, while Harmy's just referred to it, it's time to hear from a man who will be in the squad. And if you believe him or you read between the lines or listen between the lines of what he said, he'll be in the 11 as well. Stuart Broad was speaking to TalkSport this week and began by discussing how Jofra Archer would be feeling about being ruled out with his bothersome recurring elbow injury.
Yeah, his spirits are still quite high. It's frustrating for him because it's been a right elbow issue ever since I first heard about it sort of Christmas time 2019. It's just been niggling away for long periods of time. You know, he'll be fine in a training session, wake up the next day and it'll be really stiff and sore. So he's just got to that stage now where looking ahead to a T20 World Cup in November and Ashes in December and January, he can't have this keep grumbling away. He's either got to rehab it really intensively or do something a bit more drastic. So, you know, it's a tough one for him. Because he's not gone through any sort of real injury issues so far in a young career, but it's part and parcel of fast bowling. You are going to pick up niggles, and he's got some good hands around him with the ECB to look after him.
We saw last week when he got Zach Crawley out, the ball that he delivered, you just want him to be available for Australia. You just fancy. I know the wickets aren't as quick as they used to be there, but it'd still be useful to have him amongst our armoury, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Joff, he's got every attribute you'd want as a fast bowler. And who do you want bowling the last over in the T20 World Cup final? You'd say Jofra Archer. Who do you want bowling in pressure scenarios in Australia? You want Jofra Archer available. So he'll be very disappointed that he's going to miss this New Zealand series, and we're not sure how much of this summer he'll miss. But he has to stay positive in his mind and actually focus on the cricket he could play in the future and the exciting moments he could have, rather than what he's missing next week. Yeah. So he'll stay positive. You know, it's something he's got to get sorted now, because it's his elbow. It's like waking up with a headache every day. You know, it's just tragic. And he's in a place that he needs to get that right.
Mm. You've been around the side for a long time now, Stuart. What do you make of the current crop, and what do you make of our sort of current squad?
Yeah, it's exciting. I've been fortunate to play with a lot of very good players over my 2006-07. I made my debut, but the leaders within this group are probably the strongest I've seen, in the likes of, you know, Joe Root, Ben Stokes, Josh Butler, Jimmy Anderson, these guys who are very successful and have played a lot of cricket, but a lot of experience, are able to feed back to the younger players who are some of the most talented I've seen. Ollie Pope's one of the best batters I've seen coming through the system. Zach Crawley, Dom Sibley have already proven they've scored runs at international level and are still so young in their international career. And I think if you can get that side of a balance of hugely young, talented players learning off people that have done it under pressure, you can move very quickly. And I don't see, you know, we might not be peaking for Australia, but our game plan is set around winning in Australia, scoring 400 big first innings runs, creating pressure, bowling aggressively to get 20 wickets. And I see Australia very much as part of the journey of this team. It's obviously a huge aim for us to win there, but it's actually the style of play we're putting together that can make us successful all over the world. And it's very exciting. Actually, as a 34-year-old, I have been around a long time now, but when you get into a changing room with young players around you that you see so much potential in, that they're exciting, just makes you want to play for longer, just wants you to play more. You enjoy training, you enjoy the matches, and no wonder we can't get Jimmy Anderson to retire.
No, I mean, the thing is, there was a reluctance in the winter to play you and Jimmy together, I think for reasons that could be understood by the fans, but I'm sure you're hoping to bowl in partnership with him, because you two together are, especially in English conditions, you know, the best we've got, I think.
Well, in my opinion, yeah, I think we get into our best team in England. You can see even just from the county stuff, the start of this year, we're both taking wickets and bowling well. So I understood the India situation. You know, you had to play two or three spinners. To be fair, you could have played 10 spinners out there. you know, in England, Jimmy and I create pressure. We bowl for the team. We bowl for each other. And yeah, we'll be hopeful to play together this summer for sure.
That was Stuart Broad speaking with Hawksby and Jacobs on TalkSport this week. And just before we go to the break, Harmy, I just wanted to ask you what you thought of the comments attributed to Chris Silverwood. A couple stood out to me in the official press release. He said that playing the top two teams in the world in New Zealand and India is perfect preparation for us as we continue to build up towards the Ashes. And he also said, I understand what he means, and I haven't done 10 days of quarantine myself, and I haven't been inside an elite sporting bubble. But I do feel for Chris Wokes when he's left out of the squad, because Silverwood said we felt it necessary for them to have an extended break. Chris Wokes has been on an extended break for 6 months.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I can understand what, yeah, I'm with you. I can understand what he's saying. India and New Zealand at home, great competition. Great challenge, mental challenge more than anything else. to get ready for what is the big one if you're an Englishman or an Australian. But the way it actually came out and the way it's come across, it looks as though he's been a little bit sort of patronising and looking down on India and New Zealand. I personally think England is going to have a tough summer, a really, really tough summer. I think England's top order, if the England's top order don't fire, 1, 2, 3, then I think England might have a disastrous summer, because the bowling units of India and New Zealand, even though New Zealand aren't going to have Trent Bolt, in English conditions, the likes of, you know, the Wagners of this world, you know, the, put the ball in the right area, ask questions all the time. And if, you know, they haven't got the techniques quite right, then I think England's middle order doesn't need to be in within the first 15 overs of a test match. If they do, then it doesn't matter who bats at number 8, 9, 10, 11. I think England will have a real struggle this summer. So it's going to be so important mentally, more than anything else, that England's 1, 2, and 3 fire, whoever that is. Because if they don't, then you can say it's a great practice for Australia. You can say whatever you want. If England don't have a very, very good summer, yeah, Australia will be licking their lips, ready for England's top order to come over.
And in case you missed it, New Zealand announced their 20-man squad for the two test matches, followed by the World Test Championship final against India. They are absolutely at full strength. Kane Williamson, captains. Colin de Grandhomme, the all-rounder, comes back into that 20-man squad. It's a farewell for BJ Watling, who's been a loyal and highly successful servant to New Zealand cricket. The 35-year-old bows out after the World Test Championship. And yeah, it looks a very, very strong squad. So does India's, by the way. This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. And next up, we review round 6 of the County Championship season. It was another memorable week, especially for Durham's Chris Rushworth, after he became the county's leading wicket taker. And earlier on, you and I had a chat to Rushworth to reflect on that memorable moment. I'm delighted to say we're joined now by Chris Rushworth, who has become officially Durham's most prolific first-class wicket taker. Eye-watering tally of 531 first-class wickets. And it looked like it made your eyes water when you reached it as well, Chris.
Yeah, it was a lot of emotion built up, I think, because I was so close the previous night and in the morning, trying so hard to get there. It didn't quite happen. When that moment came, it was just overwhelming. Emotion, pride, just everything just kind of, you know, it just built up and I exploded. And I burst into tears on the field, which is, it was one of those things, but, you know, it's something I'll never forget.
The effort and the dedication you've shown to get from 2006-07, leaving the club and the academy, to go away, work so hard to get yourself back in a position to come back to the club and get a chance again, to then go and overtake some absolute legends of the club in the wicket-taking department. Just describe your drive and determination and what made you go to the length that you had, because, you know, you lost a lot of weight, stopped drinking for a year. All this stuff came with Chris Rush was going from number one wicket at Durham to number 531.
I don't know how to describe it. Like, to be given a second chance at your home county, your home club, that was obviously a massive honour. I'll never forget Jeff for giving us the second chance. It's just, when you get the chance and you get the second chance and the faith and trust your captains and coaches have in you, it's something I'll never forget. But, mate, like, thinking about it now, like, I remember the first wicket. I remember my debut at Henley. Got none for 100 and odd against Yorkshire. And it seems so long ago, but I think I remember nearly every single game. Most of my wickets I'll remember. It's so hard, mate. I'm absolutely thrilled to bits. Like, my phone's been going mental for a day, but I've loved every single minute of it. I love every supporter, every member. I love playing at the Riverside. When I first got into the team, you know, yourself, Otis, Bunny, Pudsey, the team had Benke, Diver, superstars, Collie, Shiv. Like, for me, that was something I'll never forget, breaking into that team. But now, like, being top of the pile, it's like I'm lost for words. It's unreal, man. It's unbelievable.
You're top of the pile, but you took us on that little journey. You know, the little journey, the highlights of that journey. Won the championship a couple of times, Lords finals. But, you know, if I was to say, pick out a couple of special moments from being, not just playing for, you know, playing at the Riverside, but special occasions. You're very close to Ben Stokes and all, you know, the young lads, Mark Wood, that's coming through and seeing them go on to play for England. You know, just take us through a couple of special occasions for Chris Rushworth.
Obviously, the first one, the debut at Henley, I'll never forget that. And that was, I think that was a bit of luck to get that game because Cal Thorpe got injured on the morning of the game. I don't think I was going to play. And then Callum got injured. I remember Jeff pulling me to one side saying, look, Rush, you're going to play. So I rang the old man, rang my dad, said, Dad, I'm going to play. I was crying. He was crying. But he was there for the first ball of the game. You know, he drove down to Henley and he was there for that. That's something that I'll never forget. The first wicket, Mark Waugh at Trent Bridge, that was special. I lived with Stokesy for a year, for 2 years. And then watching his career progress, I think everyone's, you know, been fascinated with how he's gone. But to say I guess I was there with him when he first started. It's these moments you play the game for. You make friends for life. In 2013, everyone wrote us off to get relegated. We had no overseas, and we won the championship with a game to spare. That is one of the greatest seasons you'll ever see. Some of the best games of cricket. I remember a game at Scarborough where we made them follow on. We fielded for something like 240 overs on the bounce, but we came off and won. Unbelievable. 2014 Lords final. I guess as a cricketer, you know, the pinnacle is playing in the Lords final, and to win that game in the low scoring, dark, cloudy game, I've never been so nervous in all my life until yesterday. It's like I say, it's those moments you play for, innit? You remember every single milestone. Last year, passing 500 with no crowds was special, but mate, yesterday just it topped a lot. Like it was different.
Did you ever feel, did you ever get into a purple zone where you could just make the ball talk or sing your favourite song? I'm thinking about bowling Northants out twice in a day. You know, it just looked like you were finding the edge for fun.
Yeah, I think you recognise as a bowler, Harmony will tell you, when you're in rhythm and when you're in a good spell, you know, and you feel it, and you can almost feel something's going to happen all the time. That Northants game was one of those days where generally felt like I could take a wicket every ball. That day was special. It was a remarkable game in cricket. The first day got completely rained off. We batted the whole of the second day, 20 minutes, half an hour of the third day, and I think the game finished by tea. It was incredible. But that was one of those days where I just felt like everything was going well. And, you know, lads caught the catches and the ball hit the stumps. It was just one of those days. Again, fantastic. And that was 2 days before we won the Lords final. So that was a special week.
You mentioned Jeff Cook there just, you know, briefly. And people that have helped you throughout along the journey and along the way, which is not quite finished. Man has mentioned a tear in the eye and seeing you with your dad in the crowd. But your dad, you know, everybody's dad is a special person to them, but your dad is always there. Your dad's always walking around. It's a pity the dog wasn't there. I managed to get to see the sort of the wicket that broke the record because the dog's been there all that. How important is it to have a father figure like yours who just loves the game of cricket as much as you do?
Now the dog was there. Don't worry, she was there. amazing. When your kids, everyone knows that your mum and dad play a massive part in taking you to games and taxing you around, training and all that kind of stuff. But like I say, he's always been there. He's watched pretty much every game, every ball. There was a period for maybe 2 or 3 seasons where he watched every game home and away. He travelled around, stayed in hotels, and he's been my biggest fan. I'm going to tear up here. He's always been there. So yesterday was special.
Well, you're a role model and an inspiration. I don't know whether 1,000 first-class wickets will be possible, but if my maths is right, you need another 255 in all formats to reach 1,000. So we'd love to see you do that. I mean, you've got lots of miles left in the legs, haven't you?
Well, I hope so. I'm still loving the game. You know, I'm feeling fit, strong. My drive's still there. You know, I want to win things for Durham while I'm still, you know, good enough. I'm not going to stop just yet, and hopefully there's plenty more to come.
Durham's Chris Rushworth speaking to me and Harmy a short while ago after breaking the record for the most first-class wickets for the county, and he's still a little bit emotional now. Well, it was another strong week for Durham, who eased past Worcestershire with a perfect display, really, in every aspect. Despite the weather, they beat the weather as well as their opponents, and we spoke to the captain, Scott Borthwick, to get his thoughts on the last 4 days. I'm delighted to say we're joined now by Scott Borthwick, and a lot to speak to you about, Scotty. First of all, the victory against Worcestershire. I mean, it was one of those all-round complete victories where just everything seemed to go right. Even the weather. Well done for beating that as well, yeah, as Worcestershire.
Yeah, we're playing some really good cricket. You know, guys are putting some really good individual performances in, and I thought the way we stuck out yesterday, like you said, we beat the weather, and I think the most impressive thing yesterday was we had the session washed out, and we still managed to do the job in the two sessions.
Scotty, you've done well to get over the line in the last two games, because you've been in positions at the start of the season where maybe it's that little extra firepower, a little rub of the green didn't go for you, and you couldn't get the 20 wickets to win the game. How important has the last couple of weeks have been? You won, I thought you were the winners of the group last week by not playing because of the weather. Yeah. And this week you've done the same again. So to have the bowling attack that you've got, a little bit extra fire with Mark, has that been the difference between the draws at the start and winning the last two?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the first three or four games was really frustrating because we played all the cricket. You know, we outplayed Notts the first game, and we outplayed Essex the second game. No, we lost, but it was only down to the Simon Harmer display the second innings, really. And we played all the cricket, and it's the same again at Derby. But I think having Woody back in, you know, he's obviously a world-class bowler, but he just gives you that firepower. And like you say, someone who can bowl 90 miles an hour, it's definitely handy to have. So having him back, it's been amazing. And like I say, the way we stuck at it yesterday, it was a fantastic performance. So things are going well, yeah.
And you had Will Young. Is that Will Young's last game? Back-to-back hundreds in the championship. Bancroft coming in. You know, Will Young is going to be, he's basically saying to the New Zealand selectors, I've got runs in English conditions. Having Will Young and Mark Wood in potentially international players in that first Test match, how good's that been?
Yeah, no, Young has been fantastic. You know, he's a very mature lad. He's captained his stateside back in New Zealand, so he's been great in the dressing room. You know, and to get those back-to-back hundreds, it's been fantastic, and he's put himself in a great position for the Kiwis.
And me and Manners are just talking off air a little bit about Rushy's development. He left Durham 2006-07 when we had a phenomenal side, and me and Manners were talking about Benki as the captain. And then Rushy comes back, you know, is that side who you came into, the sort of 2008-2009 side, is that something that you as captain is thinking, right, can we model on that group? Because there were some very, very good experienced players, very, very good fast bowlers, and a very, very good team togetherness.
Yeah, definitely. I think that era of 2008-2009 was an incredible squad, wasn't it? And it's almost got a bit of a feel of that now. We've got a big core of bowlers. We've got seven or eight big fast bowlers who could and should all be playing. And going back to that era there in 2008 when we had a bunch of fast bowlers and the second team was so strong, wasn't it? And it's got that feeling at the moment now. Like I say, the second team guys are playing there today, and we've got four lads there who are all knocking on the first team door. So it's a great squad to be have. And going back to Rushy, he's been fantastic, hasn't he? I mean, to get released as an academy kid at 19 to then, I think he was going playing up there, bowling off spin in the club cricket somewhere, wasn't he, when he was like 20-year-old? And then to get that chance again, and Benki give him that chance, and as soon as he got back in the side, he's never really left, has he? So now I'm absolutely buzzing for him. He's been amazing.
And it's a great achievement. You know, I tried to get somewhere close to Simon Brown, got 50 short. Graham Onions went past Simon Brown. And so for Rushy to do it, you know, just describe what Rushy's like for people that don't know him, because he is the ultimate club cricketer. His parents walk around the pitch. The dog walks even further around the pitch. He is your typical club, you know, really good club man. And the club stalwart that you want him to do well.
No, he's absolutely amazing. I'll tell you what he is as well. He's a captain's dream, because he always wants to bowl his overs. You know, you say to him, Rushy, do you want to go again? He's like, yep, I'm happy to go. Happy to go from either end. And he just knows his game so well. You know, if it's swinging, he'll swing it. If it's not swinging, he'll hit the seam. He'll bowl really accurate. You know what you're going to get from him. You know, if it's a flat pitch, you know he can go two and over. And he's an absolute captain's dream. And to go past that record with the bowlers Durham have had over the years and to be top of the tree is an incredible achievement. And he was quite emotional yesterday, and it just shows how much it means to him.
There was looked like there was something in his eye when he took that wicket to hit the front. There must have been a bit of emotion around, not just with him, but probably for all of you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when he waved to his dad, his dad was in the car park, and he waved to him, and I think he just started to cry. And I gave him a little cuddle, and I actually got emotional as well. And it just shows how much it means to us, you know. I mean, being Durham boys and playing for Durham, it was a special moment. And yeah, he was over the moon. And I think leading up to it, I think it was probably the worst he'd ever bowled, because he was so nervous. He bowled four overs for about 25, I think, and he's never ever done that. And he was so nervous. And I think once he got it, I think he bowled his last 11 overs, and I think he had four for 10. So I think the first four or five overs definitely got to him. But once he got it, it was an amazing feeling. The lads got around him last night because they know how much it means to him as well.
Well, congratulations on the season. I mean, it's peculiar setup, isn't it? Just with this sort of concertina little championship window right at the beginning of the season. Many people thought, Harmy said, actually, you know, it's mostly unfair on Durham because it's going to be colder and wetter up there than anywhere else in April and May. But you've got over that, and you're playing really, really good cricket. And it just we're all loving watching it on the streaming, you know, because the window to the championship is now open for everybody to be able to watch it. And it's so fantastic to be able to say, you know what, Durham are playing really good cricket now. I fancy watching them for a bit. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that you are on a stage now, that streaming has opened that window to let people watch you?
Yeah, the streaming's been amazing, hasn't it? I mean, that's, if anything's come out of the pandemic, it's definitely the live streaming for county cricket. I mean, even last week when we had a week off, I was sat in my bedroom watching the games around the country. So, no, it's amazing. But I think you're right. We are playing good cricket. We've played all the five teams now, and we've won two of them and draw two. It's a good place to be at the moment. Everyone's enjoying the cricket, but we know that there's still a long way to go. Our aim is to be playing Division One cricket in September. I think that was one of the first things I got when I came back. You know, you look at the how much Durham's achieved over the years, and we're a big club and we want to be playing Division One cricket. So that's our aim, and we've put ourselves in a great position to do so.
Scotty, there's somebody else doing very, very good things, young player doing very good things for Durham, and that's Brandon Carse. You know, me and Manners have talked now for 6 weeks about the championship. And if we were picking, and certainly if I was picking the three fast bowlers who have stood out in English cricket so far, from England point of view, it would be Overton, Robinson and Carse. Just tell us a little bit more about Brandon Carse. I know the England selectors are looking at him.
Yeah.
What does he give you as a captain?
Well, he gives you pace, that's for sure. He's not quite as quick as Woody, but he gets a bit more bounce. He's a bit taller than Woody. He's got that almost that tall action. A bit like yourself, Army, actually. He's got the pace. He's got almost the X factor. He can almost create something from nothing. And I think having him and Woody in the side is, like you said earlier on, it's given us that firepower. And he is definitely a wicket taker. He can bowl wicket taking balls. He can potentially go three, four and over, but that's because he's trying to take wickets. So we've been smart with his field placings and kept his catches in, but also given that protection as well. And he's in a really good place at the minute. He's in good rhythm and he's enjoying his cricket as well.
That was Scott Borthwick. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. Shortly, we'll be speaking to the former England fast bowler, Harry Gurney, after he announced his injury-enforced retirement from the game.
But next up, we look at a fantastic week for Kyle Abbott at Lord's. This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 and our review of round 6 of the County Championship. If you've missed any of the show so far or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, all credit to the three teams that managed to win because they beat the weather as well as the opposition. Durham, of course, beating Worcester by 258 runs, despite a session being washed out on the last day. Essex, well, they've had an up and down season, very much an up with an innings and 15 run victory against Derbyshire. And Hampshire obliterating the hopelessly out of form Middlesex by 7 wickets, despite being bowled out for 208. Some outstanding individual performances. Obviously, Chris Rushworth for Durham with his 9 for 108. Dan Lawrence, a remarkable unbeaten 152, beautifully timed on the brink of the England squad being announced. And then Kyle Abbott for Middlesex, for Hampshire against Middlesex. Astonishing match figures of 11 for 85. Simon Harmer as well for Essex. 12 wickets in the match, 9 for 80. And we should say, you all know now that Surrey and Somerset drew, Glamorgan and Yorkshire drew, and Sussex and Kent drew. So, Harmy, still, I mean, an abbreviated fixture list, and it was, of course, affected badly by the weather, but some truly outstanding performances.
There was some absolutely brilliant performances. 3 absolute hammerings in the games and 3 draws, which were, you know, were rain effective. Harmer, 9 wickets, like we spoke about Ollie Robinson a couple of weeks ago. To get a double 100 in an innings is it's a monumental achievement. But to get 9 wickets in an innings, that is something special. And he's Mr. Essex, isn't he? He just keeps them there or thereabouts. Alistair Cook gets a 50. Wesley, Dan Lawrence, magnificent 152, sets the game up. The one thing we talk about in the first sort of 4 weeks of the collective, we talked about runs on the board. Well, are the bowlers undercooked going into the from pre-season? Was it because it hadn't rained for 6 weeks? Well, now we've had a couple of weeks of rain, and out of 12 teams, only 2 got over 250 in their first innings, which tells you the bowlers are coming back into the game, and possibly the pressure that's getting on the batsmen, the more repetitive you go. So there's some teams are looking good. Durham, my old county, look amazing. They look really, really good. And that bowling attack, arguably back to the bowling attack that got them silverware over 10 years ago. You know, 2 very, very good fast bowlers, somebody that bowls there or thereabouts and hits the seam on a pitch which is very, very suitable. So Durham are going to be one to watch. They've got a game in hand, the second place. It's been a good week for my old county.
Also, Glamorgan, Kieran Carlson made an unbeaten 88. We've mentioned him throughout the first month. He's really making quite an impression. He hasn't scored 100 yet, but it's 450s, and he's on the leading run scorers list.
Kyle Abbott, just remarkable figures. I mean, that is when Mohammed Abbas joined Hampshire, and we thought, oh, gee, Mohammed Abbas and Kyle Abbott, that is one heck of an attack for Hampshire. And they finally put it together. Well, certainly Kyle Abbott did. 11 for 85.
He did, yeah. He's bowled beautifully. And another one, we talk about Simon Harmer and Kyle Abbott, whether the co-pack rule, players going back to play South Africa. I'm not sure that these two have got South Africa on their radar. And it was interesting, the game that was played there, you know, two sides struggling with confidence from a batting point of view. But there was a partnership, you know, Hampshire 120 for 7 and get 208 in a low-scoring game with Keith Barker getting 88. Very, very good player, Keith Barker. Came down from Warwickshire. So low-order runs, I know you like them manners, has get them in a position to sort of go and try and get 20 wickets to win a game. And Kyle Abbott is, along with Mohammed Abbas. Barker gives you the left-arm option. Liam Dawson, very, very experienced, cricketer. I've said many times, Hampshire are a good side and one to watch, but they seem to be doing well one week and not well the next week.
When Keith Barker was at his best playing for Warwickshire, I was absolutely convinced that he would play for England. I really could see a distinguished career as a particularly a white ball all-rounder. But it may just have passed him by now, I suspect. Let's have a look at how the three groups stand then. Yorkshire, Lancashire, well ahead of the pack in Group 3. They look well set for a place in Division 1 when the three conferences split up. Glamorgan and Northamptonshire in third and fourth place. Sussex and Kent. Kent really haven't got it all together. They lost 3, drawn 3 out of the 6 games. They are winless, as are Leicestershire in Group 2, where Gloucestershire and Somerset sit on top of the pile, well clear of Hampshire and Surrey in third and fourth place. Middlesex somehow not bottom of the Group 2 there, despite having lost 5 of their 6 games, because Leicestershire have lost 3, drawn 2. There are only 4 points difference between the two of them. And then Group 1, Essex go back to the top with their second win. They've played 6, won 2, drawn 2, lost 2. They're on 76 points. And Durham in second place in Group 1. Just a reminder that the top 2 teams in the 3 conferences go through to Division 1, and where they play the 4 teams they haven't played in the conference stages. Nottinghamshire and Worcestershire in third and fourth place with 73 and 70. Warwickshire, 67. They're now in fifth place, having been top of the group after 4 games. Derbyshire are bottom there, well clear of the 5 teams above them. Harmy, it's time to reflect very quickly on the format of the championship. As a good friend of mine said, it may, you know, at least the championship has got a window. When it was sort of being slotted in and around the other fixtures and in and around the other, you know, you'd sort of have one or two championship matches being played, starting on peculiar days of the week. I mean, it might be a toilet window in April, but at least it's got a window now. And all our focus and attention has been on the championship for the last month. And I've particularly enjoyed that.
Yeah, absolutely, Manners. I've really enjoyed it. And I think a lot of people were sceptical of how the three conferences would work, like you say, playing in April. But actually, when you look at it, that was probably the best month for the batsmen, because that's when they got all the run. May, with the rain that's come, it's not the run scoring and brought the bowlers back into it. So, and the streaming, we've talked about it many times on this show. The streaming makes a massive difference. I think it helps other people get to see with the cricket that shows that first-class cricket is still alive, but it also puts pressure on the players that they know they've got to perform because the people watching them, over 3.5 million people watching this stream. So when you look at the cricket that's been played so far, I think it's been some good stuff, some really, really good stuff. And the structure that's there is, for me, brilliant. I don't mind it being played in April. We're a Northern Hemisphere country, which we've got to put up with the cold, we've got to put up with the rain. That's been, you know, the history of the game has had that. But now, you say, the structure of the cricket is now, you know you've got these amount of games, you know you've got them at the start, you can prepare for them at the start, you're not going off and hitting white balls and then come back and playing red ball. That gives you a better structure. That gives you a better preparation, which in theory should give you a better cricket. You look at the divisions, that I think they're more or less set. You know, Division 2, Hampshire might think though that they can catch Somerset to potentially get the second spot, but Gloucester have run away with that. You know, what are the 13 points clear of third with a game in hand, so they should in theory win that group. The red and the white rows are miles clear in group three. And the intriguing group is group one. You've got a big county in Notts who has won a couple of games for the first time in sort of 2 or 3 years. Durham have got a game in hand, and that game in hand is against Derbyshire, who are bottom of the log, who probably are out of it. And you think, well, they've got a chance there. So that seems to be the best group, because Essex are playing some good cricket as well. So I've really, really enjoyed the Championship, Manners. I think it's been fantastic. I think it's been fascinating to watch. Hats off to the ECB. Full credit to the ECB, the way they've delivered it. And, you know, we've seen a couple of games on the TV now that the IPL's not there. So players like Young Carlson, we've talked about him for 3 or 4 weeks. He got seen this week on live TV. You know, what better exposure, and see what pressure they come under like that. For me, it's priceless for the development of our young players.
I just want to correct myself. I said Kieran Castle hadn't scored 100. He has. He scored 200s and 450s. He's got 552 runs at an average of 69. He's behind the leading batsman, Durham's David Beddingham, with 624 runs at an average of 89. You know, there are 7 batsmen with over 500 runs already. Simon Harmer's 12 wickets have put him on top of the bowlers pile with 34 scalps at 23. But Craig Overton has got 32 and average of under 14. You've mentioned him a lot, as you have Ollie Robinson, who's got 29 wickets at just over 14 and a half. And Gloucestershire's all-rounder Ryan Higgins, we've mentioned a lot. We reckon that he'd be a good option for England to fill in for Ben Stokes as the primary all-rounder. Chris Rushworth as well is in fifth place with 26 wickets at under 16 and a half. And Kyle Abbott also 26 wickets. Lots of very fine individual performances. Just a quick word about the championship specialists, if you like, the first class specialists. They've had all this attention, the live streaming. It's been their time. It's been their moment. But let's be honest, they've got a couple of months coming up in the prime of the summer, what we hope will be the prime of the summer, where they're going to be twiddling thumbs, aren't they?
Well, it looks like they are. And that's the challenge of these counties now, of how you structure. Challenge of the ECB. You put on, this is a message to the ECB, you've put on a fantastic product at the start of the season, streamed it for the world to see. Them bits in between for these players who have performed very, very well. What's the challenge to sort of keep these players not only performing and shining, to keep the product going as best they can? Because just turning your back on them while the white ball comes around is, I'm not sure that's you know, the right thing to be done. But that's the next challenge for the ECB. Where do you go from here? Well, there's a lot of these red ball specialists will be saying to their county coaches and county captains, hold on, I've got volume of runs. I've been showing on the stage that I can play, you know, this game of cricket that we all love. And I've developed my game in a way I want to be involved in the white ball stuff. So I'm sure the squad sizes, financial resources in the game, there'll not be too many twiddling their thumbs, but there'll be one or two thinking, what am I going to do for the next 2 months to keep myself in the form I'm in with the business section coming round the corner, the last 3 championship games, and then potentially a Bob Willis Trophy final. So that will be the challenge. It'll be interesting and intriguing to see where it goes.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Next up, we look at some of the other stories in the world of cricket, and we speak live with former England bowler Harry Gurney, who announced his retirement this week. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2, and in the final part of the show, we'll take a look at what else is happening in the world of cricket. I'm delighted to say that we're joined now by Harry Gurney. It's been a remarkable career in many ways, Harry. Sad, of course, that injury has forced you to retire prematurely. But my goodness me, it's been, as I said, a hell of a journey from Loughborough Town Cricket Club to the Kolkata Knight Riders and the Melbourne Renegades. I mean, There must be an awful lot more to smile about and to celebrate than to commiserate with.
Yeah, definitely. Incredibly proud of everything I've achieved and yeah, all the places I've travelled to and the people I've met, and I've just made some great memories. But also I'm in a quite fortunate position in some ways that I've got a new career to move into that I'm really excited about as well. So I set up this pub company with Broadie about 5 years ago, and I will now transition into working full-time on this, and I really love it. So I feel quite lucky. I'm probably not quite as lost as maybe some players are when the ability to play is taken away from them.
Harry, since that time, 2019, since your last game, how important is it? Because we work a lot with the PCA about transition and moving forward, especially from a mental health point of view. How important is it to have your path that when you do retire, you've got somewhere to go? How important is it, do you feel? Because you had that with a pub, somewhat less fortunate.
Yeah, it's always been something for me. The PCA are incredibly supportive. They're brilliant. Lindsay Williams, who looks after us at Notts, is just incredible. You know, she's so good at her job. And yet for me personally, I've always been throughout my entire career acutely aware of the fact that the music is going to stop. And unless you are one of five or six cricketers probably in the country who will make enough money to never have to work again, you're going to need an income. You're going to need, and even if you are one of those guys, you know, you're going to want something to do, aren't you? You know, there's so much more to life after cricket. So since a very young age, I've been very focused on what am I going to do after cricket. The likelihood is for 99% of people that your salary is going to plummet overnight. And for me, it was a case of for the last few years of, right, I don't want to make any sacrifices of my current lifestyle. And so therefore, how can I put things in place to make sure that I don't have to? And incredibly important, in my opinion, because if I didn't have this business now, I think I'd have a bit of a panic on.
Man has mentioned the highlights, you know, the Calcutta Knight Riders, Melbourne Renegades. I was there for your debut up in Aberdeen, commentating from a freezing cold caravan in Scotland. You know, finals day, we're Notts. You know, where all these sort of stack up in Harry Gurney's career? Is the pinnacle international cricket?
I think so, probably. There was a day, a T20 against India at Edgbaston, where I closed out the game against Dhoni and Rayner. That will always stand out in my memory, a day that I'm incredibly proud of. 2017 for Nottinghamshire was a very, very special year. We won the Blast, the one-day comp, and got promoted from Division 2 in the Championship. That was a very special year, actually winning two trophies, two and a half trophies, doing it with a real tight-knit dressing room, great bunch of blokes, and we had a lot of fun doing it. So that was a very, very special time. And then winning the Big Bash still feels surreal to me even now that I did that. It's just a competition that I'd admired for so long. So to win it was very, very special. And of course, to experience the IPL, it's like nothing else. So hard for me to pinpoint one thing, but those sort of three or four things would probably be the things that stand out as punctuating my career. Yeah.
I want to pinpoint something, Harry. It's fair to say that you distinguished yourself far more often with the ball than with the bat. But just going back to 2017, you mentioned promotion. I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, because my memory isn't all it used to be, a little 42 not out that pretty much secured promotion.
I nearly mentioned it just now, to be honest, but I decided against it. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, wasn't renowned for my batting. That was, joking apart, that was a great day in my career as well. I'll never ever forget that. That season I've been working quite hard on my batting. I went through phases in my career of, you know, sometimes completely ignoring it, and another Harmy will probably know occasionally a little phase where you work on it and you think you're getting somewhere or whatever. And I was in one of those little spurts, and to get those runs on that day against that attack was amazing, really, and definitely a day that I'll never forget.
My batting was always about a good time and not a long time when it comes to enjoyment factor in the batting. Right. When you look now, Harry, you were going to be part of the 100. You see this international side. You wouldn't say a one-day specialist, but somebody who played a lot of white ball cricket. It must be fulfilling when you see the way the England side is at this moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, I always say I got dropped at the end of 2014, I think it was, just before that World Cup in Australia. And I always say I can't really grumble because ever since they've basically bossed world cricket. it's just such an amazing, you know, it's the depth. There are world-class, once-in-a-generation players in there, like Stokes, your Butlers, but just the depth as well. You know, the guys banging on the door that can't even get in the team, and the brand of cricket that they have played for the last 4, 5, 6 years, this aggressive brand. We've gone from, in my opinion, probably being a little bit behind the curve in terms of the way we went about our one-day cricket to now being world leaders probably in the way we're going about our cricket, and we're now maybe the benchmark for other countries, whereas perhaps historically it was the other way around. So yeah, an amazing team that it's been a joy to watch for the last few years, and now I can't wait to watch even more in retirement with hopefully in some hospitality, Harmy, with you with a glass of wine or something.
I tell you what, your body will soon change shape if you have hospitality with me. I tell you, when you stop bowling. talking about a fast bowler, you're sitting in a pub waiting for the pubs to open. Your business partner, you know, where's he at this moment in time? And you know, you keep scratching your head, thinking, you know, how good, especially Stuart and Jimmy, you know, the bowling department we've got with England.
Again, very, very special time to be an England supporter, and has been for a number of years in that department. And I think it's one of those things, once Brodie and Jimmy are gone, I think everyone will, I think everyone recognises how good they are, but when they're gone, I think it'll just be exaggerated and we'll look back and go, wow, how lucky we were to have that pair just dominating the Test arena for so long. And by the way, their records both pretty good in other formats as well. Stuart is, he's I would say mentally in as good a place as I've seen him for a while. He seems as hungry as ever. He's loving playing for Nottinghamshire, and he's bowling well. He's bowling quick. So that bodes well. And I think that pair are just chasing records, and long may it continue.
Just we should mention that another trophy in your cabinet, the Caribbean Premier League with the Barbados Tridents. But I just wanted to ask you, Harry, you'd mentioned closing out a T20 international against India. Did you have a particular secret about practicing Yorkers? You know, Lasith Malinga used to bowl at a pair of shoes, didn't he, on the crease? And did you, because the Yorker is a much talked about subject these days, and people are less and less prepared to risk it, if that's the word. Did you have a secret for death bowling, practicing your death bowling?
Yeah, I actually copied Lasith Malinga. So I heard that was how he practiced, probably when in my mid-20s. So I started doing the same, not with boots. Initially, it was with boots, actually, but then I developed do you know the boundary rope? There's these Toblerone triangle cushion things that go all the way around the boundaries for international games and franchise games. So I nicked one of them from Trent Bridge and I plonked that down on the crease. And my personal method is I didn't stop practicing until I'd hit it 10 times. So I'd have quite a specific routine, which would be six hard length, get warm, and then six hard length balls, six cutters, six back of the handers. And then I would go into my Yorker practice and I wouldn't stop until I'd hit that cushion 10 times. So yeah, from a practice perspective, that was my method. And I liked it because it's sort of a self-policing thing. You know, if you need the practice, you keep missing it, so you bowl for longer. But actually, if you're in good nick and you're nailing them, then you're done pretty quickly. So it's a great way of practicing. And for me, I've got quite an analytical brain, so having that number target in my head worked quite well.
You haven't given the pub a name check, Harry. People are going to be wanting to pop in and see you pull them a pint.
Yeah, so I'm sat in the Tap and Run in Upper Broughton, which is halfway between Nottingham and Melton. So if any listeners are in the area, by all means, pop in. I'm here a lot. Brodie's here a lot when he's in the country as well. And yeah, we're very proud of it. We love it.
You know, it's wonderful to see you with a smile on your face. As I said right at the beginning, it is sad that injury has forced you to retire. But hey, that Caribbean Premier League must have been fun. I asked you about that. Just a word about that.
Yeah, that was arguably the most fun I had on a cricket pitch. I mean, you know what the Caribbean's like. They're just so laid back and they're there for a good time. And the atmosphere around the camp was amazing. Ashley Nurse, just an incredible singer. They had serenaders on the bus every day. And yeah, so laid back. They go about their cricket in a way that really suits the way I go about my cricket. I'm a pretty laid back bloke, which I think in high pressure situations served me quite well. And so the atmosphere over there in the Barbados camp and in the CPL in general was right up my street. I loved it.
You've been listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. If you missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.